Hello, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Eidetopod. I'm Casey Grove. The Eidetopod is a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM, and this episode features my full conversation with John Suter, the famous musher of poodles in the Iditarod. Real quick, though, as the front-running sled dog teams in this year's Iditarod are mushing up the coast today, there was some news right after posting yesterday's episode of the Iditarod, as is sometimes the case, and that is that rookie musher Greg Vitello has scratched. Officially, the Iditarod says that was done in the best interest of his dog team. We'll be looking to learn more about what happened, but that leaves 30 teams in this year's race after the 2022 champ Brent Sass scratched earlier yesterday. Okay, so there's one sort of correction, in a way. And back to the interview with John Suter, the poodle musher, here's another slight correction. I said in the interview that Suter beat some teams in some of those races. He ran the Iditarod in 1988, 89, 90, and 91. But actually, he finished ahead of other teams in all of those races. That includes John and Jennifer Gourley, the parents of the John Gourley in the band Portugal the Man. Suter also beat former newspaper reporter Tim Mowry multiple times. And one year, he beat Tim's friend and former kennel partner, my college advisor, Brian O'Donohue. There are plenty of other mushers that Suter finished ahead of. Those are just some of the names that stood out to me. He also finished ahead of somebody named Pecos Humphreys, who I know nothing about. I just like that name. Anyway, here's my interview with John Suter.
Hello.
Hey, is this John Suter, the famous musher of poodles in the Iditarod?
Yes, it is.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to kind of run through how this all came to be.
Sure. You mean how I got started with poodles and why and all of that?
Yeah, maybe just starting with how did you end up in Alaska to begin with?
Well, I came up during Vietnam. And in my neighborhood, you had a choice. You could get drafted or volunteer in the military. So I went in the Army, and I ended up getting out at Fort Rich, Anchorage, Alaska there. And that was just during the pipeline, and there were a good paid job everywhere. So I ended up getting a job and ended up staying. And I thought, well, what am I going to do for a recreation hobby? And I thought, well, I'll run sled dogs. And then I thought more and more about it. And I thought, well, why not introduce a dog that has never been run before as a sled dog and see what happens? So run sled dogs and do an experimental thing at the same time. And my father-in-law had a miniature poodle, and he went on vacation, and I had to babysit that thing. And I had a snowmobile, and I ran up down the lake, and it wanted to jump off and run. And I thought, boy, it sure can run fast. And I thought, well, what if you could get standard poodles to run like that? Then would they make good sled dogs? And then off I started, and years of mushing them. And I finally decided to give it a try to run the Iditarod and see if I could make it. Of course, everyone everywhere said, no, it's impossible. It cannot be done. Not now, not ever. And I thought, well, you know, maybe that's true and maybe it's not. And I said, you got to try to find out if it's possible or not. And lo and behold, to the surprise of everyone, I ended up there in Nome with the Fifi, with the Iditarod poodle sled dogs.
Why did you want to run a different type of dog even? I mean, whether it was poodles or a different type of dog, what was it about that intrigued you?
I thought, you know, let's put a little pizzazz on it, a little Hollywood on it. Let's see if we could get something different. I was looking at all different type of dogs. I thought about, oh, maybe German Shepherds, and I thought about all different type of dogs, this dogs, that dogs, and I ended up, because I had this miniature poodle that I babysitted that could run so fast across the lake behind my snowmobile, I ended up thinking, well, gee, maybe the big guys can run like that. And I thought, well, let's do a little experiment. Besides all the time, energy, effort to get a sled dog team running, put something extra, curiosity, something different, and see if it could happen. And off I went with kind of like an experiment, along side by side with like adventure, which was run the Iditarod.
They certainly look different, but I wonder, are there differences that you noticed between mushing poodles and what it would be like to mush just like an Alaskan Husky or a Siberian?
Well, it's easier to run Huskies because their genetic information in their brain. You know, there's things that you learn, and there's information in your brain that you're born with. And a far higher percent numbers of information in the Huskies is run and be a sled dog. Where poodles back in Europe were bred with a sheepdog and other to become a high-speed faster retriever. And so I had poodles that were excellent bird dogs. Or if you go fishing, they'd run out there and catch that fish and drag it to the shore that's on your line. It was just, I didn't teach them. They just automatically did it. They had genetic information in their brain to go do that. So it's easier to run something like the Huskies today. They're kind of like genetically born bred to, when they're in a harness in a team, they automatically go. So it's easier to train and run a team that has genetic information that's born and bred to do that versus one that needs learned behavior.
Yeah, that makes sense. But, I mean, there must be something in there that made the poodles capable of dog mushing or, you know, being sled dogs. It's been a while, but, I mean, you did finish the race and you beat a few people even.
88, 89, 90, and 91, yeah. And I ended up getting the Huskies in my team as well to be help me train poodles to do that. I compare it like this. Let's say you got a Saudi Arabian high school team and you want to make a high school football team out of them. Well, if you're a coach with them that has no background of any kind or knowledge or prior knowledge, never seen football games, you have quite a struggle on your hand to formulate them to be a team. However, if you got the high school kids that have played through grade school and everything, junior high football, and you incorporate them in your team, then those students, besides learning from the coach, would also learn from the students, and they would accelerate. It would accelerate their learning ability to be a football player, and that's what I took me years to figure that out, to learn to incorporate, put them in. So I ended up being the only true equal opportunity musher. I had little black poodles and little white huskies working together, paw in paw, on the same gang line. So I was the first and true equal opportunity sled dog musher.
Just to be clear, when you ran the Iditarod, did you also have huskies in the team, or was it all poodles?
No, I had huskies. I was running on a shoestring budget, and it took a lot more money to develop poodles to get up into there, because the poodles that didn't run or weren't interested, whatever, I sold them off or gave them away, and so I had to cycle through more poodles to get the few that would be interested in that sport. Compared to our huskies, pretty well you can get, if you're just going from A to B, you can pretty well get all the huskies almost all the time to be a sled dog. And so the numbers are way higher that will participate in the sled dog activity compared to a breed that's not been bred or traditionally run in that field.
Gotcha. Yeah. Was it harder on the poodles, do you think, than it would be on a husky just to be a sled dog?
You have to give them the mileage, lots and lots of mileage. It's the only answer when you're doing sled dog racing. They don't run fast, just got to be able to run hour after hour after hour.
Did it surprise other mushers to be behind you? I mean, like, you know, in some of those races, you beat other teams. And I just wonder, I mean, were they, like, shocked by that?
Absolutely. And one thing, like, when I go up to Rainy Pass, and it happened more often with teams that were rented, say, because a rented team doesn't respond anywhere as much to a musher as a musher that owns the team. Because they have more years and more hours with that team, so they respond and have a more workable relationship. And so when I get up on Rainy Pass, I'd always pass one team after another, and there were mostly teams that were rented, and I couldn't help myself. Each team that I passed going up that long Rainy Pass, I would lean over and go, if you only had poodles, you'd be able to keep up with me. But they didn't find that very funny. I found it hilarious. But they're saying, what, I pay all this money for Huskies and I don't beat the poodles? What's going on here? They didn't think that was very funny.
Oh, I could imagine. One thing I was wondering, are poodles better at some things than Huskies? I mean, I think they're known to be pretty smart animals, right? I mean, were there things that they did better than other sled dogs?
Well, you know, I ran the Rondi too, you know, and the stoplights, the top light is the red light for stop. And when I went run the Rondi through town, they would look and see that stop, that red light on, and they wouldn't stop. And I'd have to tell them to get on, go through the intersection. And the word of Huskies, they don't care what light is on. And poodles notice that, like seeing eye dogs, they would notice when you're supposed to stop, when you're supposed to go. And so there was a problem there with that, for example.
They were too smart.
Mostly, though, you know, a dog's a dog in a way, you know, and so forth.
Just, yeah, you did obedience with them.
Yeah, I did obedience training and all kind of things like that and stuff. So I would get first, second, third when I did obedience with them, and I did a lot of that training with them prior. Finally, when I got more and more poodles, there was no time for that. There was only time to train and put more miles and more miles of training on them. And so that's the avenue that I would go.
So with the stoplights, though, that's almost like they were too smart for their own good.
Yeah, the other thing, though, is like you fall off your sled, the poodles, they'll come back and pick you up. The Huskies, they don't care if you're on that sled or not. They're going full speed down the trail. That's your problem, whether you hang on that sled or not. That's another thing with the poodles. If you get a snow blown over trail and you can't see the trail anymore, they would zigzag to the right and to the left until they would find a solid footing where the trail used to be, and then they'd take you down where the trail used to be, even though you couldn't see it.
Yeah.
Because they'd find that solid footing down there underneath the snow drifts, snow.
Is the curly coat a factor too?
Not so much. The one thing is I had to shave their feet inside and out a real lot so that snow wouldn't stick to it inside the feet is the main thing there. But the thing about the hair is you can let it grow as long or as short as you want and then figure out how long you want it for how cold it is. And you can trim it to that or just let it go or whatever. Mostly in the fall, I'd shave them down to their skinnies. And then it'd work out okay. The hair would grow as it got colder and colder. And it'd come out about right when it came time to run the Iditarod. Kind of was an interesting thing I kind of found. In most cases, when you leave the Anchorage area, it was starting to get warm and starting to get like spring. But once you get up to Skwitna, or back in the day when I was running anyway, it would go straight back to cold, cold winter all the way from there to Nome back in the day when I was running anyway. And I don't know if it was kind of like deceiving the weather and temperature of Anchorage, say, compared to Skwitna and out on the Iditarod.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a few years, but yeah, I remember times where it really flipped kind of for the mushers as they just like right after the Iditarod started, it would get cold.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think when people talk about this story, they go look up the rule that says something along the lines of, like, only dogs that are suited for Arctic winter travel are allowed in the race anymore. And I, you know, I don't know that that's completely connected to the poodles and you, but how do you feel about that? I mean, do you think that they made that rule to stop people from racing dogs like poodles? And just in general, how do you, what do you think about that?
Well, it was 100% political. I went to the Iditarod meeting about that. They never would answer the question as to whether poodles could or could not run. And they had many other people mixed in, different types of dogs in their team through the years. And so, you know, they would turn a blind eye and let that kind of ride. And so since they would, I asked the question, direct question, and they refused to answer. And it kind of like came political. And the other thing was, if you think about it, what I got complaints about from the Iditarod Trail Committee was that the Iditarod is a husky race. And the poodles were getting the Tonight Show and ABC Wild World of Sports and Sports Illustrated and One News after another. And they weren't real fond of that. They said, they told me that, well, that news supposed to go to the huskies, not poodles. This is a husky race, not a poodle race. And they kind of like didn't like that. And you can kind of see where the politics would come into play here. And that's kind of what happened with that.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, the poodles are cute, right? I mean, all the dogs are pretty cute, but the poodles are kind of like next level cute, right?
It was kind of like that. That's right. Yep.
Getting all the attention. Well, yeah. So whatever happened to your teams? I mean, did you mush after the last Iditarod that you raced in, and then kind of what ended up happening with your dog mushing career?
In 92, my oldest daughter ran junior Iditarod. That's 150 mile race, and with poodles, and got third place doing that. And then that was kind of like the last race, and it's kind of like came time to hang up the harness. And the other thing was is if you don't lock on to like some corporate sponsor or a big sponsor, you don't last long. Most mushers, they last one or two times, and then you never hear or see from them again. What it is, it's a race while you're running, the hopes that you can get a sponsor to financially maintain you doing that activity. And if you don't lock on to one, you don't stay very long, unless you're like kind of like semi well off with funds, or you lock on to a sponsor, or they kind of fade away. All the big name mushers of all of the past, they were successful, and the most important thing was to be able to get a sponsor here and there that would float them, so they could train year-round doing just one thing, and that was getting the team together for the next year's race. And so that's kind of like what the reality is of running the Iditarod.
So it sounds like that never materialized for you, and what it just got kind of too expensive to keep doing it?
I ran out of funds, let's say. I was depleted, financially depleted. I didn't have the funds anymore to do such an activity anymore. I ran 4 years in a row, and I was doing all I could do. My guess was, it wasn't correct, but my guess was that, what I noticed all through all the years, the big-name mushers got big news. And I thought, if I could get big news, maybe I could also convert that to sponsorship. But it didn't turn out. Corporations, companies, they're very, very leery of something new and different and unusual. And if it was huskies, then and if you got big news, you could convert that over to sponsorship. It was kind of like a safe play. Where poodles, they didn't know where they'd come out on it, or would they be made fun of, or something like that. And so they go, it's too risky. And I would always tell them, hey, you know, we look at the news we get. I'd show them newspaper after one after another, magazine, and all that kind of stuff. And they go, and they just kind of We were very leery. I got a little sponsors every once in a while here and there that helped out, but I was kind of like going on a shoestring. I think if I'd been lucky, got some good sponsorship, I would have had the funds to finance it and go and have the resources to do substantially better. It's like running the Indy 500 and the guys with the big cars that they get the big tire sponsors and everything. They got new tires just to run one race. And I was there with bald tires, you know. I was hoping, oh, these tires, I hope they just last one more race because I didn't have the funds for new tires because of something like that.
Yeah. Well, John, just this last question, we have this segment on, so this is actually going to help us answer a listener question that someone sent in for our I Did a Pod podcast. And we have this other segment that we feature a dog of the day that's actually running in the Iditarod. And so I just thought if there was a particular poodle that you ran that you would describe for me, maybe that was, you know, your favorite dog or that stood out to you.
Fifi, my lead dog. That was always good lead dog, always out in front, always looking out for me and everything like that. And that would be the one.
Can you describe Fifi for me?
Being male, 45 pounds, come up to your knee, nice and friendly, love to be a sled dog. And, would always check with me back on the sled to see was I was in good shape and all this and that, and would take care of the team and keep the team on the trail and keep it pulling forward there. Even in blizzards, which amazed me, even in blizzards, would keep right on going, would keep their feet on through a hard trail, and if got off the trail, off into the deep snow, would zigzag to get back, even if you hardly could see the trail anymore at night. And that's one reason why, especially in my first Iditarod, why I beat a bunch of mushers, is that they pulled off into a cabin. I was actually looking for that cabin to be with them, to hang out overnight, because they're close to Nome. It was all blizzardy and snowy. And it was so you could only see such a short distance. I missed the trail where it led to the cabin. And so I ended up by accident getting into the checkpoint there, and I was thinking, oh, is this the cabin? I said, no, this is your last checkpoint before Nome. So, that's one way how I ended up beating a bunch of teams. It was kind of like by accident.
And Fifi helped that happen, huh?
Yes, that's right, absolutely.
And then, what color was Fifi?
Black. Almost all of them were black. I had a few white that were really, really good. A few brown here and there. But mostly were black. Just ended up being that way. When I went down and got poodles, their kennels, the Lower 48, most were that I ended up going to Dubai were black. So it just ended up being a mostly black line, a number of white ones, and a number of brown.
Gotcha. Well, John, is there anything else you want to add?
No, I guess that'll do.
Thanks to John Suter for talking to me. Stay tuned for more I Did a Pod in your I Did a Pod feeds. I'm Casey Grove. Thanks for listening.